from the crate, thanks to your friendly neighbourhood record store, Southbound Records.
Hello.
Oh, hello.
Hello. Well, we're saying hello to you, don't worry.
Oh, okay.
And everybody else out there as well.
Wow. That's a good start, isn't it?
It's a fantastic start.
There you go. Okay, we've got some good stuff coming out this week.
Your hair's looking a bit wild today as well. I'd just like everybody to know.
It's wind.
Yeah,
it's looking, wind
it's,
everywhere.
It's great, though. I'm liking it. It's a new look. New year, new you.
Should we just move along away from my windswept bad looks?
Absolutely.
Speaking of windswept bad looks, February 25th this year.
How does that... Okay, yeah.
We're talking about this artist.
Oh, yeah.
February 25th this year marked the 20th anniversary since the third album by Elliott Smith, which was also... It's called Either Or. It was also his last record on Kill Rock Stars prior to moving to a major label. And it it kind of marked the point where he stopped being one of those best-kept secrets of Portland, Oregon type thing and moved into the wider world. With this record, it's the one that Gus Van Sant used a few songs from in Good Will Hunting.
Why did he gain such a big name for himself? What was it about his music that...
Well, I don't know if it was about his music, but I think the big name came via that Gus Van Sant film and the fact that a song which wasn't on anything else was nominated for an Academy Award and he performed it at the Oscars.
Really?
That's where I think the big name came from. I'm not too sure. You know, before that, he was just like most artists on the Kill Rock Stars label. He was like kind of small and not local, but local in a sense of people's secret, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
An interesting character. I mean, in the 90s wasn't the most kind time to a male folk singer-songwriters. It had become far more of a female singer-songwriter type thing. Even
really?
Even on Kill Rock Stars. I think Elliott might have been the first male artist signed to the Kill Rock Stars label.
Right.
Yeah.
So. I honestly wouldn't have thought that. Are you just feeling it's too loud for you, Troy, or too quiet?
No, it's too loud.
Too loud?
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. Is that better?
No, that not at all.
Should we switch headphones?
No, it's okay. You know, there was artists like Mary Lou Lord around at the time that was, you know, the more of the underground singer-songwriter type thing.
Yeah.
And I think it was her that actually described Elliott Smith, what she liked about him. She said he's kind of a cross between Nick Drake and Lou Barlow. Okay. And that's actually a really, really good description of the guy. Mm-hmm. I don't think he had the greatest life. I don't know too much about his personal life, just what's reflected in the records themselves. Either Or is not a despondent record by any means. And I don't know if it's people's favourite of Elliott's. Possibly it is, possibly it isn't.
Why don't you think that it might be people's favourite?
Well, I don't think people have favourite Elliott Smith records. Mm-hmm. I think people who like him like all of his stuff.
Yeah.
You know, he died in the early 2000s, but there was never like a cult of Elliott that cropped up, really, you know, in the way that there was a cult of Kurt and a cult of, you know, a lot of people. But he's just one of those people that if people like him, they like his stuff.
Yeah.
You know, even since then, there's been a sort of an offcuts collection put out. Outtakes collection, which you'd think isn't the sort of thing that you get with someone who wasn't like popular enough to demand that, you know what I mean? You know, the guy's not Jeff Buckley.
Yeah.
But nonetheless. Anyway, for the 20th anniversary of this record, Either Or, Kill Rock Stars have put out a double edition, like the expanded edition. So what you get is Larry Crane, who recorded with Elliott in the first place, has like remastered it, and he's gone into his vaults and gone, okay, we'll also expand it with these five live tracks from a show in Olympia, like an outdoor festival in Olympia. Also, there's a few things which didn't make it onto the record in the first place. There's a demo he did for Mary Lou Lord, a song that she did. It's a song he didn't want to do himself because he decided it sounded like the Eagles. That's I Figured You Out. there's a different version of the B-side, the original B-side of the Speed Trial single. There was a song called I Don't Think I'm Ever Going to Figure It Out. He's found a different version of that. That's on there. And There's New Monkey, which is done with keyboards, but I think the one we'll hear is Bottle Up and Explode. Now, some people are going to be going, wait on, Bottle Up and Explode came on XO, the album afterwards, the major label album. It did. But this one here has completely different, I was going to say dialogue, that's not the word, lyrics. Completely different lyrics. Not even just some changes, but it's like a different song to the same tune. So I think that's the one we'll listen to.
Okay, cool. I'm interested. Jolly at the end.
There was a jaunty little piece at the end. Elliot Smith, the Either Or expanded edition, is out tomorrow, and the Indie Store exclusive.
Tori is just like really upset about his headphones.
Yeah, I've still got nothing.
You can't hear
me? No, I can't. All right, never mind. Expanded edition, it's out tomorrow. The Indie Store edition is yellow vinyl. But also, if you want it on CD, you can have it on CD. Now, moving right along.
Just trying to suss out his headphones.
Thundercat.
Yes.
The new album from Thundercat is entitled Drunk, which is an interesting title for a man who's, from what I understand, does not drink. But there you go. Drunk is the new album from Thundercat. It's been out.
Well, you can be like feel like intoxicated without actually having drunken anything, right?
I suppose you can. I don't know whether he does. Maybe. I mean, there's one way of looking at this album. Well, there's a few ways, and one of the ways to look at it is that it's made up of mainly short pieces, which are about a diverse range of subjects. But the thread that runs through those is they're all kind of like not trivial, but small distractions from or small facets of living that don't like really contribute a great deal. You know, there's a lot of like small things. So possibly Drunk is just part of that. There is some talk of alcohol and drugs and things, but generally those are from the guests that are on the record, and there's not even very many guests. Wiz Khalifa is on there, Pharrell is on there, both of them. It's more what you'd expect from a title like Drunk.
Now, Thundercat, he works with... Does he work with a variety of different musicians that kind of form his band?
I'm not entirely sure on this one. I mean, like, well, he has, obviously. You know, Thundercat, you'll find in a lot of different situations. A few years ago, you would be likely to see Thundercat playing with Suicidal Tendencies.
Where was that at?
Well, they played in Auckland. But
At Laneway?
I don't know where they played.
I saw him play at Laneway a couple of years ago.
That was his Thundercat.
Right. All right. But this he was just playing with other people.
Yeah. If you'd let me finish, Hannah.
Sorry.
There's a bunch of situations where you find Thundercat. You know, he's been in Suicidal Tendencies. Obviously, he's on the Kamasi Washington Epic album alongside his brother, who's the drummer, Ronnie Bruner.
Right.
You'll find him, oftentimes, you'll find him with Flying Lotus, of course, on You're Dead. He's on that. On his own EP, you found him with Herbie Hancock, the last EP. Yep, on one of the tunes, Lone Wolf and Cub. It was Thundercat with Herbie Hancock.
Favourite song.
It's the best one on there, I think. Unfortunately, that doesn't appear on the new album. What does is Them Changes. And I'm not entirely sure why it fits on this album, but he obviously is, you know, whatever the meaning of the album might be to him, obviously Them Changes fits into it. I thought Them Changes was about the end of a relationship or end of a friendship. I could be wrong. I don't know what Thundercat writes about.
That's okay, though.
Yeah. As to this record, well, there's over half of it is produced by Flying Lotus.
Cool.
The other half, I think the one that BFM's playing, Friend Zone, that's... I'm not sure who does that one. Is that Monopoly? Let me have a look. I can't remember. But yeah, there's a few different people on this record. You'll find Kamasi on Them Changes, for example. Who else is on it?
How long has he been involved within the music industry? Because, I mean, for me personally, I've only been really, like, hearing about him since he's been playing under the name Thundercat.
I think he's always used the name Thundercat. I mean, I think he was always sort of related to the music industry anyway, because his dad was a drummer with the Temptations and played with Diana Ross and did a lot of stuff like that. His, you know, like I said, his brother is a drummer, Ronald Bruner. Thundercat, that's not actually his real name, unfortunately. His real name is Stephen Bruner. I think the first time people started he started appearing on notable things would have been about 2002. Didn't release a solo record till 2011, maybe 2010. Was that when Apocalypse came out? I think it was.
I can't remember.
But yeah, he seems to have been around for a while, although it's only sort of now he's, like, you know, sort of gained this pop stardom over the last few years. People go, oh, Thundercat, you know, rather than some weird, huge black dude playing a six-string bass and going...
I mean, it's amazing, though. Like, it's so nice to see kind of the bass at the forefront of the band or the sound, you know?
Well,
like
it is, and which is why I'm slightly puzzled by a lot of aspects of this album, Drunk.
Okay.
In that if we're, like, thinking of the sonic spectrum... There is far less bottom end in this than one would expect from someone who's like a virtuoso bass player. But I guess it's not about the flash. It's about, you know, whatever he thought was necessary to get into these little songs. And by little songs, I'm not being down on them. I'm just saying that most of them run at about 2 minutes, which gives me the same feeling as the last Flying Lotus album, is that with everything being about 2 minutes long, I find there's not much room to breathe when you're listening to it.
Mm.
You know, you listen to the whole thing and you haven't caught a breath the whole time. It's bang, bang, bang.
Do they kind of form like little interludes almost?
No.
Okay.
No, that's the weird thing. They're entire self-contained little pieces. I mean, I guess they're as long as they need to be.
Mm.
But yeah, it's a lot of it's like goofy humour, fart noises. I'm not kidding.
But it's good. Do you like it?
Mostly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's a fun record. And I like the fun way it's packaged. Like I said, it's come out digitally already on CD and stuff, but the vinyl's due tomorrow, and I brought it in to show you there, and it's a 10-inch box set of four 10-inch.
It's pretty crazy. He's gone hard out.
Yeah. Four 10-inch red records. Bright red.
And we're going to be listening to this morning. Is it uh-uh?
It could be uh-uh or it could be uh-uh. I realised I put you wrong. I said we're going to listen to the instrumental. Didn't I say that to you?
Yeah.
Well, it is. It's instrumental in that there's no lyrics, but there is some vocal, and they sort of go ah.
That's cool.
But this tune, I think it's, you know, while a lot of this is like kind of a weird sort of synthesis of pop and R&B and electronic, and it's this one is the one that could conceivably, if someone said to you, I found this weird jazz funk thing from the 70s and I've updated it using this keyboard, you could possibly believe it. I think this is a really cool one, and the fact that there's no lyrics or comedy in it, it sort of makes it stand apart from the rest of the record.
Let's listen to it.
I don't know.
Damn, I just ran and got some jam while listening to that track.
Well, there you go. by Thundercat. While you were running to get your jam, me and Alice were sitting in here discussing the way that there seems to be no space in the there piano isn't. Lines or anything. It's relentless and great.
How do they do it as well? How do you like compose a piece like that where you're just like going hard all the time?
Well, I don't know, but I guess that's why it's 2 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds very... I mean, I suppose to me it sounds very improvised. I don't know if that's kind of like the beauty of it.
Yeah, I don't know whether it is. Maybe it is.
I wouldn't say that it is, but it kind of sounds like it is. So it's like this kind of magical moment, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could well be. Speaking of magical moments, on the album you'll also find a tune called Walk On By, which features Kendrick Lamar. And cool. The way that it, where it comes at the point on the record, Thundercat is always singing in that very sort of light, airy, high voice, right? It's but and then when Kendrick comes in, it's almost like the scene shifts. It's really good.
Cool.
Not so much one that I'm, you know, a lot of people are going to like, which I'm not so keen on, has Michael McDonald and Kenny Loggins. Yeah.
What?
Yep. Are on.
Weird.
It. Yeah,
okay.
Not my kind of thing, but I'm sure some people are going to get a kick out of that. Nonetheless, It's on Brain Feeder, Drunk by Thundercat.
And you can get it at Southbound.
But not till tomorrow. It's not released till tomorrow.
Shame, you can't get it till tomorrow.
That's right. 3 10-inches in a box. They're all red vinyl.
Cool. Last but not least, what are we looking at?
Well, totally not least. Now, this here is a record from 1971, which, while it hasn't been reissued again now, it was reissued again about 2010, and every time we get this, we sell out of it quite quickly, and we're left with periods of not having it for ages, which is a great shame. This is a magnificent record by Pastor T.L. Barrett and the Youth for Christ Choir.
Thank you, Pastor.
This it's an album called Like a Ship, brackets without a sail, close brackets, and was originally recorded in Chicago in 71 and released on the church's own label. He was the pastor of the Mount Zion Baptist Church in Chicago, a church which had seen people like Donny Hathaway. The great Donny Hathaway was a congregation member, as was Morris White from Earth, Wind and Fire.
Gosh.
But anyway, Pastor T.L. Barrett was like a fairly young dude. He would have been, at the time, he would have been in his late 20s. And what he'd done is he organised a choir and a band so that the kids would have something to do rather than getting in trouble. I get, you know. But does this necessarily mean you're going to come out with a good record? That, to me, sounds like a recipe for like tears of boredom. But what came out in the end was a record which I think is one of the finest examples of gospel soul ever put to vinyl.
Really?
Yeah, and it doesn't just, I mean, you could disagree with me, it doesn't matter, but I think this is a magnificent record.
I mean, it looks magnificent, to be honest. I mean, Pastor Barrett looks like a boss.
Yeah.
I would want to learn how to play piano from him.
Yeah, you probably wouldn't want to invest in any schemes with him.
No,
about 20 years ago, he got busted for ripping his congregation off to the tune of about $2 million or something.
No way.
But you know, he paid his dues and all of that. He's still a pastor. Whatever he did like that, I don't think that we can get away from the fact that he released this amazing record. Now, what is also amazing about it is that, okay, the choir, when you hear the choir, you can hear that not everyone's perfectly in tune.
That's all good.
No, it's fine. But what makes the record, I think, really stand apart, even though it's all Pastor Barrett's compositions, and fantastic they are too, one of the guys at his church was Gene Barge, who was associated with Chess Records. He was a sax player, going right back to the 50s, I think, but he was doing arrangements at Chess Records. And so he connected a couple of other people with Pastor Barrett for this record, one of them being the immortal Philip Upchurch, the guitar player, who was associated with quite a lot. Do you want to hear who Philip Upchurch played with?
Yeah.
Well, obviously Donny Hathaway. He's the guitarist on The Ghetto, for example.
Wow.
And also he's the guitarist on the whole Donny Hathaway live album. That's not all he's
doing.
He was in Rotary Connection. He did stuff with Melvin Jackson, Terry Callier, both of the Adderley brothers. I mean, this guy, he was even on the Howling Wolf Electric album, Electric Mud.
Wow.
Phil Upchurch, an amazing guitar player. So where do we put him on this record? Put him on the bass. He's a bass player. The drummer on the record is, well, there's two drummers, I think. And now I've forgotten who they are, but never
That's
mind.
Okay.
Richard Evans, also one of the, somebody who's played with Donny Hathaway, he's on the record as well. But it's not like the professional backbone supporting the amateurs. It's not like that at all. It's the way that it works is just great. And the star of the show, well, you could say the star is the chorus, the choir, but I think it has to be Pastor T.L. Barrett. Wait till you hear the dude. I mean, this was originally made just to sell. He would do speaking appearances where he would like do motivational speaking, and he'd be selling copies of his sermons on record and also this.
Wow.
And it became one of those things that record collectors and soul heads knew about. I confess, I didn't know about this till Light in the Attic put it out 7 years ago.
That's all good. I didn't know about it until today.
Oh, there you go. That's all right. It doesn't matter because it's amazing. And in fact, I think there's so many good tunes on this, but we might as well hear the, let's hear the title track, Like a Ship Without a Sail.
Let's do it.
From the Crate, thanks to Southbound Records, 132 Simon Street, next to T White Spikes.